Check, check. Okay, we're rolling. Good day to you. This is Benjamin Walker. I'm in the Netherlands. I've just got off the train at Central Station here in The Hague. It's a quiet day. I took the train from Amsterdam to The Hague because, well, I wanted to see Slobodan Milosevic, who is currently standing trial for crimes against humanity.
Don't know what the Hague people like to do on Friday afternoons, but
the trial was getting a lot of press, and pretty much every article said the same thing, how Slobodan was belligerent, defiant, constantly berating the magistrates, making scenes. But there was one article in particular that really caught my attention. It mentioned that the former dictator was doing a lot of reading in his cell. Books by John Updike, Ernest Hemingway. For some reason, I couldn't get this out of my head. In fact, the image of this petulant war criminal lounging around in his cell reading books kind of drove me nuts. TV, I could understand, but reading.
Excuse me, I'm looking for the Yugoslav Tribunal. What building is that?
Yugoslavia Tribunal. How can I best lopen?
Keep going.
Yes, to the right and at the traffic lights to the left.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
It's on your right side.
You know those posters you always see in the library? They say things like, reading makes you human, or read, discover humanity. Well, I've always taken those at face value. That's why I'm fascinated with Slobodan Milosevic. Here we have the butcher of the Balkans on trial, forced to confront his crimes and his victims, but yet all he can muster up is contempt and scorn. No remorse, no empathy, but yet every night he goes back to his cell and puts up his boots and reads books. So I decided that, obviously, he isn't reading the right books. So I went to The Hague and brought him some better ones. I'm looking at myself in the window right now. I have all these wires and cables coming out of my pockets, and I'm holding a microphone in one hand and a bag of books in the other. Maybe I should take the sunglasses off.
Excuse me.
One of the books that I brought him was Flow My Tears, The Policeman Said, by the science fiction writer Philip K. Dick. At the end of the book, Felix Buckman, who's the policeman of the title, has just learned that his wife's died of a drug overdose. He's flying around in his quibble car, weeping. Then he stops at this robot gas station where there's a middle-aged black man in a top coat waiting for his car to be filled as well. Buckman gets out of his quibble and, on a little scrap of paper, draws a picture of a heart pierced by an arrow. And then they have this conversation. Here, let me read you a bit. The black man said slowly and firmly, but also a little loudly, "These places, these coin-operated robot gas stations, are downers late at night. Sometime later on, we can talk more where it's friendly. I can tell you're feeling down at the mouth, you know, depressed. That's why you handed me that note, which I'm afraid I didn't flash on at the time, but do now, and I've had that sort of inspiration, or rather call it impulse, from time to time during my life. I'm 47 now. I understand. You want to not be by yourself late at night, especially when it's unseasonably chilly like it is right now. But it's okay. I can dig it. Don't worry about it one damn bit. You must drop over. You can meet my wife and our kids, three and all." I have this scenario in my head. Slobodan is in court, only now his attitude is different. He's no longer cross-examining the witnesses, he's no longer dismissing anyone's testimony or scoffing at anyone's credentials. He just sits there in his chair with his head bowed, every now and then doodling something in his notebook. Then, a little Albanian girl tells the story of how the Serbian army killed her entire family. He doesn't even look her in the eye, but when she finishes her account of how her mother and sister were both raped and then shot up with assault rifles, he lunges out of his seat. The guards tackle him as he runs towards the blue chair where the little girl is seated. They pry a piece of paper from his outstretched hand and pass it to the judge. It's a drawing of a heart pierced by an arrow.
Excuse me, sir. Is this the Yugoslav Tribunal building? Is there a main visitor entrance?
Yes. If you go that way, then turn left, and then you'll come to the other side of this building.
Okay.
There's a main entrance.
And this is where the Milosevic trial is being held?
This is in here, yes.
Okay, thank you so much.
I also brought Slobodan Milosevic a collection of short stories called The Fierce and Beautiful World by the Russian writer Andrei Platonov. One of the stories is called Homecoming. It's about a soldier, Ivanov, who returns home after 4 years. His wife confesses to him that in her loneliness she had once reached out to another man. And Ivanov throws a tantrum at this, and in the morning he sneaks away to board an outgoing train. As the train pulls out of the station, he realizes that his two children are running alongside the tracks, chasing after him. Here, let me read you this part. Ivanov closed his eyes, not wanting to see and feel the hurt of the falling, exhausted children, and he realized how hot his chest had grown, just as if the heart languishing inside it, after beating uselessly all his life, had suddenly broken out into a kind of freedom, filling his whole being with warmth and with trembling. He was now aware of all that he had known before, but much more precisely and more realistically. Before, he had felt life through a barrier of pride and self-interest, and now, suddenly, he had touched its naked heart. All of Platonov's stories take place in an alternative reality of sorts, a reality where there is still pain and suffering and unhappiness, but at the same time, always the possibility of redemption. And in Platonov's reality, this redemption is never something cosmic or theological, but rather human and always within our reach. I like to imagine Slobodan exposed to this reality late at night in his cell. I especially like to imagine the look on his face when he puts the book down, and yet the reality doesn't go away.
Hello, sir. Recording devices aren't allowed in the building?
No, sir.
No, sir. Yeah, I work for radio in the United States. Where's that?
You want to go to the court session?
I'd love to.
You can't take your devices inside.
Take notes. Can I leave them with you?
We will lock them in a locker, yes.
You will lock them in a locker?
Yes.
Okay.
The courtroom was separated from the press room by a wall of glass, but I was able to sit pretty much directly in front of Milosevic, and he definitely noticed me because I waved at him. And of course, a guard immediately came over and informed me that waving was absolutely forbidden, so I refrained from making any further gestures, but I wanted to, you know, point at me, point at the books, and point at him. All right, here's the deal. I'm in the main lobby now. They're playing on the monitors what I just witnessed in the courtroom. The judge is about to ask Slobodan Milosevic if he has any concerns with the new 8-hour timetable, and he's totally going to go off, which you'll hear his translator, the woman in English. For some reason, he's not addressing the court in English today, but listen, okay, here we go.
Mr. Milosevic, is there something you want to raise on this?
Yes, I did want to say something. From 6 to 8.30 is the only time in which I can use the telephone, which means 2.5 hours in the evening. The possibility I have to communicate with my associates will also be restricted because that time has been limited to 8.30 when everything closes down. So I won't be able to use the public phone box which exists in the corridor either after that time. Let me repeat, I make no requests, I don't ask for anything, but I want it to be known what conditions I have been placed in. And if this is a way to abuse and mistreat the accused, then I would like to have this understood in this way. because in the time that I have at my disposal, I'm not able to see to my basic human needs, especially as you intend to have this last endlessly. But a human being does have the need to breathe fresh air, to eat, and to communicate. But as I say, let me repeat, I'm not asking for anything. I just want this to be noted.
Is that not amazing or what? Poor Slobo doesn't get enough time to use the telephone.
You know, as I stood there listening to him go off about how he's being so abused, all I could remember was how back in 1995 I used to work at this little magazine store, and we'd have NPR on all day, so I'd pretty much stand behind the counter and just listen to story after story about how the Serbian army was overrunning safe areas and massacring villages, and I remember all I wanted to do was find Slobodan Milosevic and rip his arms off and beat him with them. And now, 10 years later, I'm here at his trial, bringing him reading material.
I've just delivered the books now to the registry, and they've promised me that they will give them to him at the beginning of next week. I wrote a little note on the inside of the Platonov book. I wrote, Dear Slobodan Milosevic, I understand that you love literature, so I have brought you these books. I hope you enjoy them. And then I signed my name and wrote my address, which is insane because, like, this guy could have me killed. I mean, what if he thinks I'm mocking him? Oh, man, I totally should have not given him the Crime and Punishment.
The third book that I brought Slobodan was Crime and Punishment by Fyodor Dostoevsky. You can see how this book could be misconstrued, but Crime and Punishment really was the main reason I went to The Hague. You know the story. Young Raskolnikov kills the miserly old moneylender after deciding she doesn't deserve to live. Then he spends a few hundred pages fighting his conscience, his family, a police detective, and the love of a young street prostitute. Until finally he breaks down and confesses his crime and is sentenced to prison. The book ends with an epilogue in which Raskolnikov finally comes to understand his crime and his culpability. But it's more than guilt or an acceptance of responsibility. It's transformation. Let me just read you the last two sentences. But here begins a new account. The account of a man's gradual renewal. The account of his gradual regeneration, his gradual transition from one world to another, his acquaintance with a new, hitherto completely unknown reality. It might make the subject of a new story, but our present story is ended.